Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your Chantress of Everything Valuable and Beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. I'm here with two old friends, and Reed I haven't met, but I'm here with Emily Falk and Greg Gorga of the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum. We're talking about a show that's hanging, and it's featuring the artist Kevin A. Short's work. And Short is known for celebrating the beaches. And he's known for his wonderful renditions of water and the life on the beach. And I found it interesting looking into his background that Kevin, you know, had a turning point when his family moved to New Mexico. And he realized how much he missed the ocean. He was born in San Diego and raised in Santa Barbara, and all of a sudden he finds himself in New Mexico. And it's there that he started to paint reminiscences of the sea. And it turned into a major career, and now the Maritime is doing his work. Just a shout out that Kevin Short's paintings, we're going to actually talk to Kevin in a little bit. But it's called The Peaceful Sea, paintings by Kevin A. Short. And I want to tell you guys, if you haven't been to the Maritime Museum lately, this is a great opportunity to see some wonderful art and also stuff that's going on at the Maritime Museum. You know, the Maritime Museum's been with us since 2000. It's at the Waterfront Center. And then it curates, Emily's curated a number of fantastic shows for the Maritime Museum, but there's also exhibitions, hands-on educational experiences. And, you know, over the years, I've learned that our maritime history in Santa Barbara goes back 13,000 years, which is pretty amazing, from the Chumash culture to the serpent culture. And now, you know, a really important part of what the Maritime Museum is showing us is how we have to curate our own ocean, be very cautious of our own ocean, and here in Santa Barbara especially. They've got 8,000 square foot of gallery space, and this is all celebrating our ocean and our maritime culture. And Greg is here with us. And Greg, you know, I'm interested to know, I'm seeing you on the screen with one of Kevin's paintings behind you. And there's a yellow-orange surfboard and a bunch of surfers, and they were looking out to the to our beautiful Santa Barbara Channel. And, you know, tell me what you think. How does this affect you? How does Kevin's work affect you?
Oh, it's just amazing. And that picture is called Is That the Same Kid? His two sons were surfing in that scene, and one of them, they're both off the picture, so you don't see either one out in the water. One's behind those bushes where the folks are standing, and the other's off to the other side. But as he said, his son was surfing so much and so well that these people are saying, is that the same kid out there? And maybe they saw both sons, and they look alike, so they're not really sure. I want to say, Elizabeth, thank you so much for your kind words about the museum. I have to tell you that, because Emily will not tell you this, but Emily started here a little over 12 years ago, and she just turned around this museum and added color, added depth to our exhibits, and then started bringing all this amazing artwork in here. And so, we are just an entirely different museum with Emily as our curator over the past 12 years. And so, the kudos really belong to her, and really turn all the wonderful exhibits that we have now to create them and turn this around.
You know, while we're on that topic, Emily, what was the most challenging show to hang, do you think?
Art exhibit or other kind of
thing? Any exhibit that you've curated.
Oh, the Point Conception lens. We had to haul that thing out of Point Conception, airlift it out, and get it down here on trucks. That was insane. It was fun.
And then build an exhibit around it after you got
and
it.
And build
here.
An exhibit around it. That was insane.
It turned out beautifully. And there's Kevin Short.
There was only like five or six people allowed to touch those lenses. And Jim Woodward has done over 200 of those restorations of lenses. And he came back for the opening of that exhibit. And he told us that Emily had created the best lighthouse exhibit, lens exhibit that he had ever seen in the world. So she did an amazing job for that with that one as well. But that was a challenge.
And Kevin Short has joined us now. And we're seeing him in front of, I can see three of his gorgeous paintings. And Kevin, we were just saying before you came on the air, it's so interesting to me that reading your bio, that you really turned back to the ocean when you didn't have the ocean in New Mexico. And that's kind of what spurred you on to, you know, get that sea down on canvas and celebrate that. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is the paint boxes. I'm reading in the bio that you have your special gear that you actually discovered in a painting. Joaquin Sorolla was famous for these small little kits, and he's a painter also of light and color. Last century, of course, but you discovered that he was a cigar aficionado and that he would carry his paints in a little cigar box. And I was interested to see that you've got this cigar box that you carry with you, which holds mini canvases, paint, and brushes. That's got to be a real mini canvas, right? How small?
The smallest ones end up being only 4 inches by 6 inches. And on average, I paint 8 inches by 10 from the boxes. It's a very workable size.
So you can fit an 8x10 canvas into the little box?
Yes, a canvas board, which is something I custom make. And then I hot glue Velcro on the back so it will stick onto the lid and not fall into the paint.
How cool is that? And you know, when you go out, now Greg is in front of a painting where we learned that two of your sons are surfing. And then, you know, there's some surfers that are looking on. What inspires you? Obviously that had something to do with your son surfing, but what is it like a major inspiration? How do you sit down or stand up and start painting? I mean, what gets you to paint?
I will see something a scene or something on the water or something that we all experience that my eyes will suddenly be riveted to and I can't shake it. And you'll notice that usually it's something that is called behind the scenes. And in a funny way, we all live our lives behind the scenes. And that's where I live my life, behind the scenes. And so I will see something we all see and it'll strike me and go, that is a little moment in time and it's gorgeous and I have to capture it. And that's exactly what happened in the long painting that you saw of my son. That's called, Is That the Same Kid? It's a little moment where I noticed the people were watching him. I was watching him originally. And then I noticed this little crowd of people on the beach, and it seemed to capture everything that was happening that day.
Now, I want to drill down on this. You live your life behind the scenes. What does that mean?
Well, I think I go through life and I'm one of those people that instead of looking at my phone at a bus stop or while I'm waiting, I look up at clouds, or I will notice a little rabbit that's come out of somebody's garden. And it's a little bit of a behind the scenes, everything we do, you know, the little moments in time that we remember.
You know, that really gave me a little bit of goosebumps there, because that is something that we don't do enough of, I think, you know, just focus on the small stuff that's so enriching.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, the other question I have for you that I really want to get into as well is, a lot of our listeners are interested in art and interested in a lot of listeners email me and say, you know, I'm a painter. I want to know what it's like to be a career painter and how you did it, because that's a major achievement these days is to, you know, and having come from a family in which, you know, your dad's a PhD chemist, you're surrounded by scientists. I have a little bit of parity with that. And I'm the only member of my family who isn't an engineer. I have all these mathematicians around me and, you know, very detailed technical people. It's a challenge, you know, how do you come from that? Maybe when we get back from the break, we can talk a little bit about those two topics. You know, what does career artist mean for Kevin Short? How did he get there? And then what it is to grow up in a family, for example, like you did, where, you know, there you didn't have a prototype, you didn't have a boilerplate in front of you of being a career artist. So I'm interested to know those two things. And, you know, it's just a shout out. Greg, can you tell us one more time how folks can see the exhibition?
So the exhibit is on display through December, but come on down now. We are closed Wednesdays, but open every other day, 10 to 5, at the Maritime Museum in the harbor by the boats. Look for our Ranger, our 105-year-old sport fishing boat. It has a nice banner of Kevin's work out there to advertise it. And just come on down to the Maritime Museum.
You're kidding. You've got a banner with Kevin's work. Fantastic.
Instead of a sail, the Ranger has a Kevin's work, a banner out there, yes.
Kevin, how did that make you feel to see that?
Overwhelmed with joy on a level that's hard to communicate, because I've always viewed that harbor as my dad's harbor. He was a sailor. He had a boat in that harbor. And even though he was a PhD, he would have looked at that banner and thought the world of what the opening was about, and what the exhibit was about, because it is a meeting of art and the harbor and our lives down that part of Santa Barbara.
And your dad, did he recently pass? Did I read that right?
Yeah, he did recently pass. And one thing that I was astonished by is spending so much time at the museum and at the harbor, because of what the museum's done, I transcended any kind of melancholy or sorrow. And I am literally walking around with a smile every time I'm in the museum and every time I'm at the harbor, because all it did was, all the show has done is condense all my favorite memories of my dad at one of his favorite places to be on earth. And it's just a joyous occasion for me. It really is.
And I wonder, I wonder maybe the work then has a different depth to it, perhaps.
Absolutely. And it's hard to communicate just how gifted Emily is at being a curator, because she took my work and was able to put it together in a way that could communicate. Because I not only do I feel what I just told you about my feelings about my dad and the show, but I'm having people I've never met come up to me and they are sensing that feeling in the show. They're feeling those emotions. They're feeling that connection. And it's awe-striking. I'm a little wobbly about the whole thing.
So you know, maybe if I could try to put what you said into my own words, that Emily has created a true and reflective almost feeling of space and what that space holds for both the artist and the viewer.
Absolutely. I don't know of another museum where that could have happened.
That's wonderful.
I really don't. Just like I said, behind the scenes with my work, there's a little bit of, I like looking at the nuts and bolts of life and how we respond to life and how we respond to the sea and color. And if you walk through the museum, you can see it does have the Fresnel lens from the lighthouse. That is the inner workings of literally the guidance of California for 100 years.
And also, it's so interesting to hear that from somebody who's known for painting light so well. You know, that's very, very cool connection. You know, Richard's giving us this hand signal, meaning we got to go to quick break. I want to talk a little bit more with Kevin and Emily and Greg, and Rita's here too. She's marketing director at the museum. Want to talk a little bit more about how Greg came to find Kevin and ask Kevin to do a show for the museum, what that backstory might be when we get back from the break. Hey, Richard.
Yes, ma'am.
So, you know, you feel okay now?
I am feeling fantastic. I actually felt fantastic the last few weeks in spite of those tests that I took. I have to say that I'm neither positive nor negative. Now I'm neutral. I don't know what that means, but there you go.
Lord, well, I'm so glad that you feel that you recovered and you feel very well. And yeah, may that long be the case. Let's go to quick break back with Kevin and Rita and Greg and Emily. We're talking about a new show that's hanging at the Maritime Museum. We're talking, I think, about what this means for both the artist and the museum, it sounds like, because that sounds like this is one of those really very, very deep and heartfelt visions that impact both the artist and the viewer. So don't turn that down. Back in a minute. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and we're celebrating a museum show at the Maritime Museum, The Peaceful Sea. It opened in mid-August, and it's hanging till after the holidays. So now is a great time to go and see it. It's celebrating the sea and everything that goes around it, surfing, paddling, swimming, being the spectator, you know, being part of the beach, being part of the ocean. And it's paintings by Kevin A. Short. And we were talking a little bit about, you know, Emily's talent in hanging a show. You may be thinking, well, what is it? What does it really take? It's a whole thematic approach, and it takes many different forms, you know. And I remember being in class, working on a master's, and I remember it was a teacher from San Diego Maritime Museum was our professor. And he was talking about the kind of craft that goes into hanging a show. And it's not about the lighting and the color or the position or the actual chronological sequence of what you see on the walls. It's what Kevin was saying. It captures something. It captures a sense of place, a sense of time. And in Kevin's case, he's reflecting on it, captures the sense of who he is and also his heritage. So we learn that the paintings are hanging in the place where his dad held so dear and so important in his life. He had a boat not too far from where the paintings are hanging now. And that Greg has taken the trawler, and instead of the sail is Kevin's work on canvas. Can you believe that? And that his dad must be looking down and saying, there it is, right? There it is. There it is. There's the place. How warm and cuddly is that? That's fantastic. So Greg actually told me during the break that I wasn't supposed to ask him the question about how the museum found Kevin. I was supposed to ask Emily the question, how did Emily find Kevin? How did you approach him? How did you convince him to do a show?
Okay, well, he knows this story. About 8 years ago, I had a little manila folder with the name Kevin Short on it and his sort of bio. I was online in a picture. And I was very obsessed with his work. But I didn't think our museum was quite ready for various reasons. I wanted to freshen up the museum, brighten it up. We had carpet. I wanted wood floors. I wanted better lighting. We hadn't gone through AAM accreditation. I wanted to be really worthy of the show. And so I approached him, I think when we had the SERP Heritage show, maybe a year and a half ago or so, I can't remember exactly, it was during COVID. And he came and saw that. That was the Rennie Yater, wonderful boards. He had painted with John Comer. John Comer's artwork was all over the walls. And he was really taken with the colors and the installation. And we decided on a show. But I wasn't going to ask him until I thought I might get a yes. And I wasn't sure before then. So I have wanted this for a really long time. You know, when you have this little secret in your head and that you're this goal, but you don't tell anybody about it. So that's how it happened. And he was gracious enough to do it and want to do it. And then it went forward and it was really my favorite installation I've ever done.
Is that right?
Yes, 100%.
Why?
I haven't stopped talking about it.
Why is it your favorite?
There, something happened that doesn't normally happen when I'm hanging in an art exhibit. I decided I had to tell everybody who he was. I wasn't just going to put up these beautiful paintings with a little plaque and even a little bio, which is the normal. There was something in him that had to come out beyond the paintings. So I started digging deep, and I have quotes on the wall about him from other people, quotes by him. Somebody probably wouldn't have wanted me to put up. They're personal and they're great. I have his cigar boxes, his paint boxes there. I have his reference to that. I have just bits and pieces of him. And then, you know, of course, the bio and everything else. And then his wonderful film, 14-minute film of him surfing on the water and talking about how he has to see the water. He has to see the light. He has to see the place. He doesn't follow photos. He has to feel it. Then he has to paint it live. And then he takes his little painting home and paints in the studio. Everything about him was capturing things live and being there in the moment, feeling the emotions, seeing with his own eyes. Your eyes don't fool you the way the photographs do. So all this had to come out. And yes, it comes out. If you're an art person and you can sort of read paintings, or we all read them differently, you can get his light and his you can get what he's trying to say, but not to the extent that I wanted that to happen. So I did all these other little odd things, and I played around with his colors. I wanted to get his blue out, which is this very wonderful blue. I wanted to get the orange of that surfboard next to it, so that popped out of the painting because I have an orange door next to it. And I just played around until all the paintings sort of flew off the wall, you know, with the correct colors behind them. And then I also had to hang the paintings so they talked to each other. So I had 33 paintings to put in a sequence in an odd space that would work together in sections. And it always turns out different than what you have in your mind when you look at pieces on paper of that until you get in the gallery. And so that's kind of like the process of putting it all together for me.
So I want to pick up on something you said, Emily, and I want to hear what Kevin has to say about this when we get back from the break, which is your eyes don't fool you the way a photograph can. And I want Kevin to talk about that a little bit, because that is something that we're building this structure in this hour where Kevin is saying that. Well, he didn't tell you guys this, but he said this during the break when all great things are said. He can judge the high points in his life by the fact he's looking at his phone the least. So I want to hear what Kevin has to say about the eye versus the photograph. In the history of plein air, that's a really interesting historical departure, because when the photograph came along is when plein air actually began. And so we can talk a little bit about that. Hey, Richard, let's go to quick break. When we get back from the break, we're going to delve into photography versus the eye with artist Kevin Short. And I'm joined by Greg Gorda, the director of the Maritime Museum, Emily Falk, chief curator, and Rita's here too, marketing head of the museum. Don't turn the dial back in a sec. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and we're celebrating the show at the Maritime Museum, The Peaceful Sea. And you know, what I'm learning is that this isn't just a show. This is sort of a life thing. And that Emily's created the narrative of an artist's way, you know, the artist approach, the artist's creativity, how the artist actually sees. And she's used bio clips and she's used physical things that the artist touches and uses, namely the paint box that he's created, to tell the story of Kevin's vision, how he goes about looking. And Emily said something that I want to hear more about, which is she said that she learned that the eye does not lie, that a photo could and often does. And then I mentioned that Kevin's reflection, that he knows when he's in a good spot in his life, when he looks at his phone the least. And so I wanted to know, Kevin, this reflection of Emily's, the photo versus the actual plein air experience. Can you tell me more?
Yeah, well, the eye is many times more sensitive than color film, even much, and even much more so than the color chip that digitizes what your camera and your phone sees when you take a. So you have that just, you know, sign or engineering wise, your eye is seeing something a camera can't see. But there's subtle light changes in the movement and as the light is going across the water and creating sparkles. And you also, when you're painting, you are aware that there are the smell of the salt air or seaweed, and you see little colors sparkle that a camera just can't pick up. And that's why I go out and see it live, because that's what inspires me. And we all have that same experience that I do. It's just that I spend my life focusing on that. And that is, you pull out your photos, you pull out your phone and show a friend, say, look how pretty this is. And they kind of go, maybe. And we do that to our own photos. It's, why did I take this photo? Why do I have so many of this? Because we experience it, but the camera can't record it the way our eyes did.
You said something that I can really relate to, because I'm speaking to you guys from my little cabin, Lake Arrowhead, and I'm way up on the side of the mountain, very remote. And it, there's a thing that happens with these very, very tall old cedars. I've got many of them around the cabin, you know, some of them 200, 300 years old. And when you wake up in the morning, you go out and it's a bright, sunny day. There's a smell that's so incredible from the cedars, because it's a warm smell, but it's different than anything else, this smell. And Kevin, you mentioned that, you know, your experience, you smell the salt air. I'm wondering, can you, you know, what do they call it when you mix senses? There's a word for it. When people can you know, instead of, like, for example, if they hear music, they'll see a number in their head. You know, it's not synergy. There's another word for it. But how do you capture the smell of the salt air in your paintings?
You know, that's something I'm still trying to get a hold of. I do notice that when you mentioned seeing, you know, going out in the morning and smelling the trees, there is kind of a crispness that you're experiencing. Or if I was once painting on a bluff looking down, and I look down and I'm almost done with my painting, but I see there's a beehive at my feet that I hadn't noticed when I set up. So that level of anxiety around the bees, or the smell, if the sea is smelling good, I seem to paint a painting that reflects that kind of pleasant quality. Whereas when it's a rotten smell, you know, bird guano, that somehow comes through. I don't really describe it, but I do see it. Paintings will become starker, or they'll become more gentle. It's something that I do notice, but I'm not sure the mechanics behind it, but I try to pay attention to it.
What about the sound? Does that figure as well? I mean, I'm seeing you there, and there's a painting behind you of waves crashing. Does the sound get in there too?
I think it does. I think you'd have to ask people. I'm going to I'm going to speculate that it does, simply because, especially at the opening we just had for the exhibit, when people were communicating to me their emotions at seeing the painting, they're picking up on all the emotions I experienced. And some of that is the feeling I have when I hear the sound of seagulls and hear the sound of shrouds on the mast, sailboats clanging.
Yeah.
There's rhythms going on. And I noticed that when there are sounds that form rhythms, my paint strokes will become a little more rhythmic. I can't say it's an exact science, but I do see it. And people who respond to the paintings in an emotional way, they've seen it.
So Richard's giving us time. We got to go to quick break. I want to hear from Emily and maybe Rita even, and Greg. So Kevin is saying at the opening, which was a couple of days ago, people were picking up on the emotions. They were pulling the emotion out of the painting. They were vocalizing what those emotions were. And I want to hear from, you know, you guys that were there, what emotions were conveyed to you? What did people say? And let's see what I guess it's the innocent bystanders, Emily and Greg and Rita, what they came up with, what the attendees saw and how they conveyed the vision into an emotion in words. I want to know what you guys heard. Hey, Richard, let's go to quick break and get back. I want to hear what the audience, it's not audience because that would be oral, what the viewers, what emotions came out when they saw, you know, it's not just the paintings, it's the environment in which the paintings were and in the location and the place and the colors and the lights and the sounds and all that, that makes a huge difference. Which is why we have public openings, by the way. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute.
You.
Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. We're talking with the gang. Literally from the Maritime Museum. Emily Falk is here. Greg Gorda, Rita Sarotkin is here. She's a marketing director. And Kevin Short, we're celebrating the hanging of Kevin's work for the museum called The Peaceful Sea. Opened a couple of days ago, be going on through the winter. You've got to take a look. It's 33 paintings hung in a really artistic narrative style. In a unique collaboration between, you know, visionary curator and a visionary artist. And we were talking a little bit about this idea of the eye and the photo and how the photo can lie. And Greg brought up a really interesting story. I wonder, Greg, tell us a little bit about that. It's so reflective of what we're talking about.
Sure. So we had a show a year and a half ago of Arthur Beaumont. He was the most prolific Navy artist. And he was the first to paint a mushroom cloud. He was at the atomic bomb test at the Bikini Atoll. And they had photographers there. And his painting showed these black formations at the very top of the mushroom cloud that was not in the photographs. And the admiral was in charge of those tests, was asking them, why did you put that there? And what was it? And he says, I don't know, sir. I just know it was there. And later they found out that that cloud went so high in the air that ice crystals formed at the top of it. And that was what Beaumont was seeing. But that, because of the glare of the flash, did not show up in the photography. So, and I also thought it was really interesting what Kevin said, because I do this all the time. I take a bunch of photos of something beautiful that I'm seeing in person. And then I get home and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to just delete that photo.
Not the yeah. same. So, but what's really interesting, you know, here again, you know, in the history of art, there, you know, it began around 1870, 1880 or so, that colors were not necessarily thought of as being true to what you see. And colors became, you know, I'm thinking of the work of Johannes Eiten, who is a color he was a professor and an author at the Bauhaus. And he developed this idea of color as symbology. And so, you know, when you said the mushroom cloud, and he was the first to witness it and the first to actually capture it, that there was black at the top, that is highly symbolic as well, whether or not he saw it or not, you know. And then the fact that you're talking about another scientist, I think Kevin brought this up, witnessing a mushroom cloud, seeing a devastating purple. Well, you know, you can say to yourself, well, maybe that it did exist in the eye, but maybe there's something more to the eye. And now we're learning that Kevin is talking about the sound of the sails, you know, when they're covered, they're latched together. And that distinctive cling, cling, cling that you hear in a harbor, and how that influences his paint technique, how it becomes more staccato, you know, in reference to what he's hearing as he's painting, as well as when he's smelling something beautiful from the ocean, the canvas, I think his words were, become more gentle, more spacious. And so, you know, what we have is the full experience of being an artist. And I think what Greg was saying about the way that Emily's hung the show, she's actually echoing that full experience in the curatorship of the show. So that we have, I love the comment about, Greg mentioned, you know, she fell in love with, 10 years ago, she fell in love with Kevin's work, specifically the blue. There's a blue that's real distinctive. And she fell in love with that blue, and she wanted that blue to pop. Well, what do you do when you want blue to pop? You go to the opposite on the color wheel. And so she creatively put an orange door next to a painting that had that deep blue with an orange surfboard in it, so that you recognize how deep the blue is. You see where she was going with that. And I want to know, you know, Kevin, you know, when you talk about going out and you're inspired by the small. So that seems to be an interesting contradiction. And I want to actually kind of delve into that a little bit. When you're an artist of the ocean, there's really nothing bigger. So true. When you're talking about the small, can you tell me what you're seeing?
Yes. And that's a great question. And there could be hundreds of answers. I was just at El Capitan's beach yesterday, and I decided just go look at the ocean. And right down just about 20 yards off the sand was a pod of 8 dolphin with, you know, 3 or 4 brand new dolphin there. But they weren't going anywhere. They were just floating and sitting there. And occasionally one would break off and swim in a circle. But that's a quiet moment. We're used to dolphin going down the coast. And that's a little tiny moment that was engrossing, and it was relaxing. And same thing happens as the sun is setting. We all know those last 10 minutes, there's probably 1,000 different color changes, and each one of them has a magical quality for all of us. And one of my issues as a painter is, which one do I pick to paint?
And so what's the answer to that? Which one do you pick?
I don't really have a steady rule other than whatever mood I show up in and that resonates with the light. That's the one I will pick, and just decide that life is finite. I'm not going to live forever. I can't do 1,000 paintings a day, and I'm going to take joy in that one for that day.
I love it. I love it. The words to live by. Even we get back from the break, I want to go back to a question I asked Emily and Greg. There was a lot of emotion going on a couple nights ago in the opening. And I want to know what the words were. Since we're on radio, that's what we got. And I want to know what those words were around seeing the show and seeing Kevin's work and seeing the creative way that Emily hung it. So, Richard, let's go to quick break. And then we get back from the break. I want to hear some words. What did people say? What did people experience? What emotion came out? Don't turn that down. Back in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck, it's Elizabeth Stewart. We're talking about The Peaceful Sea. This is a show that's on at the Maritime Museum of the work of Kevin A. Short. And we've got a few minutes to discuss what the viewers saw in the opening. Emily, maybe you can go first. Tell me what you heard.
Well, I heard people feeling this calling from the paintings. I guess that's the emotional response. There was a calling, like I've either been there, or I want to be there, or I am there. And in paintings like Line Work, which is right when you go down into the show, it's bam, right in the corner. It's this huge wave. I can't tell you how many people told me I am falling into that ocean. I am diving into that water. That's emotion. And next to that is Dreams of Butterfly. That's this very orangey painting on that beautiful blue sort of periwinkle wall with a blue lifeguard tower coming out. And I actually matched the paint to lifeguard tower for that wall. And so you're like, it's isolated and it's gorgeous. The sun is either coming up or down. I'm not sure in that one, but there's this little tower and all the people have gone away. But you imagine there's going to get busy tomorrow and there'll be a lifeguard up in that tower. And it'll be all filled for a moment. There's a restfulness. So all these other people would say these things. And I was watching people the whole night. And beyond just in complete awe of the show, it was gorgeous. They would feel they were there. And he did a big Santa Barbara canvas. And in his little paint box is his mini study that he did here. And they're going, oh my gosh, that's the study. And then look at this huge painting that he did. He was here, but that's all he went by. And his mind and his emotions. It was so stunning to see this response.
It's so interesting that you bring up that the painting of the lifeguard tower evoked a temporality so that it brings the viewer backward to where it's very quiet and forward into where now it's a throng full of beach goers. And so there was a feeling of time in that painting. Greg, what did you hear?
So I heard, I mean, it's just a buzz of people. I mean, these paintings evoke so much because we all live near the ocean and you get that sense of the ocean and it's in special moments because Kevin does such a great job with the light and the glittering. I'll give you my opinion because I'm not an artist. You know, as Kevin was saying, a lot of it is calming because, you know, you could tell the rhythm of the waves in his paintings. The way the light shines. I mean, even in the reproduction behind me, you could see that shimmering, glaring light. And then the actual paintings, it just really pops. But there's also that one Emily just mentioned where it's green water with white foam and then a blue up top. There you get a little turmoil. You get like a sense of like, because that wave is crashing like in all directions. So it's not so calming. I'll tell you another thing. Last night I had dinner at the Yacht Club. And right at that magic hour that Kevin was talking about, those last 10 minutes. And I'm like, first of all, I appreciated that sunset more after seeing Kevin's show. And then I was like, man, Kevin needs to paint this right here. And then the supermoon came up off over the water and the shimmering light off the there. And it was just like, wow, this is what he captures in his paintings, that actual light I'm seeing right now. And it was just beautiful. So, Kevin, you also need to do a nighttime scene with the water.
Do you know what Greg just reflected on? Something that I think is really important, and that when we see work and we feel it, we see things differently when we leave the show. And you have a moment of looking at your worlds differently. And sometimes that sticks with you. And like Greg was saying, it stuck with him to the extent that he became the artist's eye. Kevin, you need to paint this. You see, he's seeing through the paintings. You know, he's looking through the artist's paintings to the artist's eye. And that's what really good work will make you do, by the way, I think, is re-look. You know, there's the difference between seeing and looking. And so it makes you re-look at what you might have missed or what you, how you actually see, you know, do you see with the idea that you're going to see the as Greg was saying, the glitter and the glare? Do you see past that? Do you see into it? Very interesting that there's the most powerful of all things, the ocean, can be captured that way. you know, and then people can re-look at the ocean, which is so much a part and so much part of our lives. And I guess what, you know, sadly, we don't go there enough. It was struck me that Kevin said, I went yesterday to El Cap to look at the ocean. It's like, when was the last time I went to look at the ocean just to look? It's so rare that we do that, even though we live, you know, stone's throw. So it's an opportunity to get a revision of where we live, I think, the show. A Peaceful Sea. Well, thank you all for coming. Kevin, thanks for your work.
Thank you, Elizabeth.